responsibility provides coordinates to others who want to undertake a comparable journey. It might be Amma, the Indian teacher and mystic, whose certainty of God's love has generated profound social change across Asia. Her devotion has inspired others through philanthropic works to establish schools and build hospitals and homes. At first, of course, though, she was dismissed as a mad teenage girl in a fishing village in Kerala, going into trances and cuddling everyone. People thought she was nuts. Greatness looks like madness until it finds its context. Mentorship is a thread that runs through my life now in both directions. I have men and women that I turn to when the way ahead is not clear, and younger people that look to me for guidance in their own crazy lives. Note that the mentor's role is not solely as a teacher, although teaching is of course a huge part of it. When Cox talks admiringly about Carl Sagan, it's not just because of his academic expertise, it's because he felt personally guided by him. Watching Sagan's emotional take on science in Cosmos was the trigger that made Cox, at 12, decide to become a scientist. We choose mentors throughout our lives, sometimes consciously, sometimes not. Sometimes wisely, sometimes not. The point of this book is to understand this process and to improve it. When selecting a mentor, we must be aware of what it is we want from them. When we are selected as a mentor, we must know what the role entails. One of the unexpected advantages that my drug addiction granted me is that the 12-step process of recovery that I practice includes a mentorship tradition. When you enter a 12-step program, you have to ask someone else to guide you through the steps or sponsor you. This typically induces an unwitting humility. Few people would say, "Hey babe, it's your lucky day, I want you to take me on a spiritual journey." Usually one feels a little shy on asking someone to sponsor them, a little meek, a bit like you're asking them on a date. In undertaking this, we accept that our previous methods have failed, that we need help, that our own opinions are inferior to the wisdom of the mentor and hopefully the creed that they belong to. In 12-step custom, the sponsor teaches the sponsee the method by which they practice the 12 steps. They replace their own sponsor, and they give to another what they have been given. Whilst it may bear personal inflections, it's sufficiently faithful to the original program to inherit its power. The same, I note, is true in martial arts traditions. There's a lineage and a system that is carried from teacher to student. Clearly there are parallels in academia, but anyone who's been to school knows that mass education can be pretty inconsistent and the average harried educator has too many bureaucratic and financial burdens to mindfully endow more than a handful of pupils with the elixir of mentorship. In this book, I will talk to you about my mentors, how they have enhanced my life in practical and esoteric, obvious and unusual ways, by showing me that it's possible to become the person I want to be in spite of the inner and outer obstacles I face. I will encourage you to find mentors of your own and explain how you may better use the ones you already have. Furthermore, I will tell you about my experience mentoring others and how invaluable that has been on my ongoing journey to self-acceptance and how it has helped me to transform from a bewildered and volatile vagabond to a mostly present and usually focused husband and father. I have mentors in every area of my life, as a comic, a dad, a recovering drug addict, a spiritual being, and as a man who believes that we as individuals and the great globe itself are works in progress, and that through a chain of mentorship and the collaborative evolution of systems, we can improve individually and globally together. Sometimes in my live shows, I ask the audience if they belong to any groups, a football team, a religious group, a union, a book club, a housing committee, rowing club. I'm surprised by how few people have a tribe. Whilst the impact of globalisation on national identity cannot yet be fully understood, I can certainly appreciate the reductive appeal of statist myth. I become ultra-English during a World Cup. The last one in particular was like a jolly revival of the death of Diana in its ability to pull a nation together in collective hysteria. But soon enough, the bunting comes down, the screens in public squares go black and we are atomised once more. The space between us no longer filled with chants, ditties and in-jokes, eyes back on the pavement, attention drawn within. I'm